Carl Sagan once called it the pale blue dot, a mote of dust suspended in a sunbeam. It's our home world, Earth. It would be tempting to think of Earth as one member of any number of exoplanets that might host liquid water oceans, and even life in the Milky Way, and the universe at large. And that very well may be true. All you need for liquid water are conditions that are eminently repeatable throughout the cosmos, and there are two ways to have it. Heat from a star and internal heat from radioactive decay can both melt ice. But it also remains true that Earth has some attributes that, on their face, do not seem likely to be all that common in the universe, even given the enormous number of chances for it to happen. And those may also define whether a planet can have life, or how far life can develop. A very big factor here might lie with the moon, and how it came to be that we have one at all. Moons are certainly not rare in the solar system. The majority of the planets have them. Though perhaps tellingly, the terrestrial planets tend not to. No moons for Mercury or Venus, and Mars's moons are thought to be captured asteroids. But moons are common otherwise. And while we have yet to confirm an exomoon around an exoplanet, there simply isn't any reason to think we won't find them, as instrumentation improves and observation continues. Our solar system is full of moons, Jupiter having nearly 100. And even tiny Pluto has its moon, Charon, which looks more like a double minor planet system than anything else. But the Earth-Moon system might also be characterized as a double planet. Make no mistake, the moon is huge, larger than Pluto, and 27% the size of Earth. It's been floated that the presence of the moon may have been integral to the advent of life on Earth. While that may yet prove true, it's actually not the great filter it was once advanced to be. That idea was based on the notion that life originated in tidal pools on Earth. The waves and tides could provide calm pools of water and depressions in the coastal rock that would presumably allow chemical reactions to occur that wouldn't be likely in the tumult of the open ocean. In this situation, no moon, no strong tides, though there would be still some activity there because of the gravitational effects of the sun. Recent discoveries in the study of abiogenesis, however, have moved away from tidal pools and towards volcanic hot springs and glasses, having been the more likely environment for the chemistry of life to begin. Though in fairness, there is still the open question of the role of geothermal vents at the bottom of the oceans. Both options are still on the table, but either would seemingly be able to happen independent of the existence of a moon. What might not happen, however, are some of the other factors. The moon regulates Earth, and in a roundabout way, its formation may be responsible for Earth's axial tilt. That's one area that's not really discussed much, but it very likely had a hand in how life on Earth developed. The tilt actually has to be within certain tolerances, or it works against you. If Earth had too much tilt, the seasonal variations would be much greater, giving a very different landscape to life and evolution. But if you don't have enough tilt, you have no climate variation, which might serve to effectively stagnate evolution through a lack of environmental pressures on it. A world with no tilt may be a world that is forever microbial, but there's also regulation in that without the presence of the moon's gravity, the tilt wouldn't be stable and would vary wildly, making for very chaotic conditions for life. We seemingly need the moon. But the circumstances of the formation of the moon do not seem to be likely that they would be all that common. It seems to have been the result of a collision, and indeed, that collision is what tilted Earth in the first place, and also defined the rate at which Earth rotates. Fast spin is important for regulating temperatures. Had Earth rotated slower, its variations in temperature would be greater, and ultimately photosynthesis might not have been viable. The leading hypothesis is that the material that coalesced into the moon was a mix of material from a Mars-sized object and proto-Earth that was thrown off due to the nature of the collision being a glancing blow. The object, known as Theia, in part seems to have survived the impact to a degree, in that there are enormous blobs or plumes of material deep in the mantle that might just be remnants of Theia, though that's not yet been proven. Also bolstering this are isotope ratios taken from lunar rock samples that show that the moon is nearly identical to Earth in that regard, specifically with oxygen and tungsten. In fact, too identical if the two objects had formed together instead of one partially being part of the other, with a lot of vaporized material mixing as things settled down. But there are also problems with that. More on that in a bit. But what we can say is that the giant collision is the most likely mechanism for forming the moon. The other options for the formation of the moon present greater problems. One of the alternative ideas here is that the moon formed from material thrown off by centrifugal force from Earth's crust during its early days. But that would require Earth to have rotated far faster in its youth than what seems plausible. Another is that while planets can capture moons, at Earth's mass, it would have needed a far thicker and more extended atmosphere to slow the moon down for gravitational capture. And if the moon had formed next to Earth in the solar nebula, there are a host of geological problems that should be evident that we just don't see. Perhaps most problematic is the somewhat high angular momentum of the Earth and moon system that points squarely to the impact scenario. But it's not that crazy of an idea. Impacts during the formation of star systems are common. In fact, we've already seen this in the galaxy in the form of an infrared flash from a protoplanetary disk in the 1980s that left an afterglow in that system that persisted for nearly a year. The only explanation for the flash was two large bodies colliding, though perhaps not obliquely as it happened with Earth. Within this is an interesting mystery, however. So computer simulations of the Earth-Theia collision initially suggested that the moon should be made mostly of material from Theia rather than proto-Earth. Later models dispute this in that they suggest a larger fraction of the makeup of the moon is from proto-Earth. But there are serious issues here, because isotopes of silicon and zirconium paint a picture where the planet and the moon are significantly more different. The question of how all of this unfolded remains open. But within this is yet another mystery. Earth exhibits prominent and active plate tectonics, as evidenced by earthquake zones centered on areas where this is occurring. And it's the only body in the solar system that has this. Now, in fairness, the ice shell worlds, particularly Europa, do show terrain that is somewhat like plate tectonics, but more in the wheelhouse of ice cracking, shattering, and moving occasionally. But as far as gigantic crustal geologic plates subducting and moving, Earth is unique. Ideas on why this is vary. The terrestrial inner planets that are more like Earth than they are Jupiter or Saturn give some clues. Mars is interesting because it has an unmovable uniplate. No plate tectonics or movement at all. So a weak point in that can create a huge volcano that rages for so long that it becomes the largest volcano in the solar system in footprint, which is Olympus Mons. Mercury early on lost a lot of material, basically most of its mantle, so it's no surprise that it has no tectonics. Venus, however, is a weird one. Venus, despite being a near twin to Earth as far as internal temperatures and size, doesn't appear to have plate tectonics. There's some evidence of volcanoes, but it's not quite like those of Mars. Rather, the planet seems to periodically deform and crack open, and then experience great resurfacing events. One idea is that Earth's oceans might be playing a part here. The water lubricates the whole process, and plate tectonics would normally have occurred on Mars and Venus, but without long-term active oceans, it doesn't happen. But there may have been another factor that allowed Earth to go in the direction that it did, the Theia-Proto-Earth collision. Back to the apparent remnant blobs of Theia deep below the surface of the Earth. These are known as low shear velocity provinces, and they are areas where seismic waves move slower than in other areas of the Earth's interior, anomalously so. One mundane option for these zones is that they are the remains of ancient, subducted plates that have sunk deeply into the Earth. But another is that they are the remains of Theia. If so, those remains may have severely disrupted the flow of rock inside the planet. That might have had major defining effects on Earth. As the remains of Theia sunk into the planet, it might have caused huge plumes of hot rock to well upward, coming into direct contact and putting pressure on Earth's solid crust. Put enough pressure on the crust and it might set the ball rolling for subducting plates about 200 million years after the collision, which happened about 4.5 billion years ago when Earth was in its infancy. If this is the case, our current plate tectonics would literally be a remnant, an echo, of the collision that created the moon. And there are other questions. What effects does the moon's tidal forces have on plate tectonics? It's unclear, but there is force there. Another is the effect of the moon on the convection of the mantle. Without that, there wouldn't be anything to continually drive tectonics. We also don't fully understand the effect the presence of the moon has on Earth's core, and the strong magnetic field may be driven in part by the presence of the moon. There are several implications here. One is for exoplanets. For terrestrial worlds, roughly the size of Earth with inhabitable zones, if such worlds prove to have large moons, then they may have been through a similar process as Earth, and underwent collisions of their own. It could then be hypothesized that those exoplanets also have plate tectonics going on, which may factor into their habitability, especially if they're showing candidate biosignatures. If, on the other hand, we find that terrestrial worlds with large moons are rare, then the reason for the great silence may be clear. For the magic to happen, you need a moon, and you need plate tectonics. Plate tectonics are thought to be important for life by creating a carbon cycle, where atmospheric CO2 released in volcanism can get locked up and subducted instead of accumulating too much in the atmosphere. That cycle was thought to be crucial to life on Earth. However, more recent work has created models of worlds without plate tectonics that can maintain surface liquid water for billions of years. So some kind of life may be possible for those exoplanets. Thanks for listening. I am futurist and science fiction author John Michael Godier, currently thanking the moon for everything it's done. The poor Theia also deserves recognition since it basically no longer exists. And then there's the subducting continental plates. Just too many things to thank, and be sure to check out my books at your favorite online book retailer and subscribe to my channels for regular, in-depth explorations into the interesting, weird, and unknown aspects of this amazing universe in which we live.